Was that ant that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh, one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this? You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
It's amazing that I got an iPod in my pocket that I keep trying to run the battery down on. I just can't get this battery to run completely down, no matter what I do. So, you know, I push the on button and you see the little battery meter going over there and try to figure out all different types and ways that I can get this thing to run completely down because I need it to reset the memory. That thing won't go dead for nothing. So, you know, like I always say, the secret's in the details there, you know. The doggone battery technology these days, if you pay attention, is getting really incredible. By the way, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. As well as when you're on there, if you scroll down, you'll see a link to People for People Radio Network. Go over there and visit with those wonderful people as well. So anyway, you know, battery storage, energy storage, big question mark. Mad Science Show is live. It blows my doors off how when you listen to the people that are always constantly complaining about alternative energy such as wind and solar, and they're saying that it's not reliable because the wind isn't always blowing or the sun isn't always out and all that jazz. You've heard it all. But they seem to neglect the technologies on the table there before them. You know, going all the way back to, you know, when battery technology first began and all the way through, you know, different types of batteries, lead acid batteries, nickel metal hydride, lithium ion, you know, nickel cadmium, even just regular, you know, batteries technology. Ed Byrne, I can't even remember all the different names of them. It doesn't matter anyway because it's gotten pretty intense on how good these batteries have actually become. Because they need things to last longer. Especially, you know, the people out there who like to spy on your lifestyle, they need a battery that's going to keep a memory in. They need a battery that's going to keep charged up, so the more you interact with that, the more that they can sell your private information to advertisers and such, you know. And so, you know, there's been all kinds of chemical batteries, like I said, named off a few of them. And it seems that these batteries are getting even better. I actually threw a video link in there of a deal that's supposed to rejuvenate the old batteries. Doggone it, what the heck are those types of batteries? Just your regular average Duracell and other name brand batteries that you use. I hate it when my brain does that. But anyway, regardless of all that, you know, they say that they need to figure out a way in order to make, you know, alternative energy sustainable, be able to, during the time when the sun ain't out or the wind isn't out, to be able to store that power so that you can use it later. And I'm sitting there, I'm scratching my head, I'm looking at the whole doggone thing. Alkaline batteries, that's what I was trying to say earlier. Why couldn't I remember that? Anyway, while I'm sitting here, I'm scratching my head looking at the whole thing, and I'm like, man, these people, I swear, they just can't seem to get their act together. We've already got the storage capability of storing, all different types of energy, whether it be air pressure, water pressure, electrical pressure, whatever, it doesn't matter. We got all the answers necessary to resolve it. It's just a simple fact of taking this piece and putting it with that piece. And you look at that and you just wonder why these folks ain't figured this out yet. I don't know. It's kind of maybe they don't want to figure it out because, you know, we do have that fossil fuel thing. We do have that petrodollar to protect, I guess. So you can't tell everybody, hey, man, we accidentally gave you the secret to energy storage and we don't want you to use it because, you know, we need that petrodollar. So, you know, for whatever reason, the system just doesn't seem to be able to get the big picture, you know, all the pieces of the puzzle put in the right place. But fear not, that's what old Mad Science and old Crazy Haired Shaziz is here to do, to start pointing out a few things. You know, battery technology, if you understand it, there's two different types of batteries that, you know, like a regular lead acid battery and then a deep cycle battery. And, you know, these things are made in a couple different ways in order to, one of them, you can drain the charge down more than the other, you know, so that you can have a longer run on that battery without destroying that battery. So, you know, even in the lead acid battery, there's still pluses and minuses on both of these things. But when it comes down to other battery technologies out there, you know, whereas they might have their, you know, pros and cons as well, if you understand the differences of these two types of batteries or even capacitor technology, then you start to see a different picture. Now, with capacitors, you can actually charge and discharge them rapidly, up to millions of cycles with the ultra capacitors that they got. That means that you know, you don't have to worry about that capacitor going bad, and they will charge rapidly. The normal battery technology, it takes a little bit longer to charge those batteries, because you're actually you're fighting against the battery itself, trying to push out. Well, you're trying to push that that power back into that battery, and so it takes a little bit longer. And you can't charge and discharge these other types of batteries fast, because they're just not built for that. But once you understand that, and then you start taking in consideration capacitor technology that is capable of charging and discharging rapidly, now you know, putting those pieces of the puzzle together, you can use one to complement the other. There are batteries out there that they call bat caps. One of the terms that they use, it's a half it's a hybrid lead acid battery with built-in capacitors. It's really good to pack a punch in those real cold weather times, whenever the battery doesn't want to work so well. And so that particular technology isn't new. It's not even rocket science. But understanding how energy travels, and understanding how these different devices work, the capacitors work and the batteries work, you know, and different types of capacitors, different purposes for all these different capacitors, those bits of information will help you to design an energy storage system that will, you know, exceed the normal time limit that these batteries could actually endure. You know, normal batteries, you can get a pretty good battery to last several years, you know, maybe even up to 10, 20 years if it's a good, really good, well-built battery and it's maintained properly. You can get it to last a long time. And so with that said, if you're not abusing that battery, then that battery will last multitudes times longer than it would otherwise. You know, if you're constantly charging it and recharge, or charging it and discharging it, and you drain that thing way down, and you're giving that battery a workout. But imagine if you put a buffer between that battery and whatever it is that you're charging it with, and then you put a buffer on the opposite side of that battery to whatever your load is. You're able to charge and discharge rapidly capacitors, so you can get that energy to flow where you want it to go without, having to work that battery too hard. And at that point in the game, your battery just becomes, you know, a complementary source, a backup power, so to speak. So using modern day technology, that with the ultra capacitors and, you know, regular DC capacitors, even AC capacitors, well, if you want to, you know, pulse something to ramp some voltage up, we have all that technology. And why it is that the industry hasn't figured all this out yet, it's just beyond me. I don't understand why, the solar power industry isn't like all up on this type of information. Because if you could have a solar power station that wouldn't use that energy like it normally does, where basically you're taking that power and you're using it to charge power banks, big old battery banks and such, and you're trying to force that energy in there. So, you know, sure, you can charge your batteries up, but you could charge them up so much better with a couple little tricks that you could learn along the way. And with that said, you know, heck, you got a, you've already got half the battle solved. If you can make those batteries not get hot and last longer, and use the buffer between there, which would be the capacitor banks, to carry the load, so the capacitors can charge and discharge rapidly without causing them things to get hot, without destroying the battery. You know, and at that point in the game, your battery's just there, once again, to act as a backup power in order to keep those capacitors fully topped off so that you have a constant flow of energy, and a smooth flow at that. You'd think that there'd be some brilliant people out there who probably would have figured this out by now. But it just, like I said, it baffles me that nobody gets it. I've sat here and I've talked to people I don't know how many years talking about all these different concepts, and I even showed circuitry where there was absolutely no batteries involved, using nothing but capacitors, using capacitors as batteries, and there are other things out there that do the same kind of concept, maybe not to the same extent that I'm talking about, but batteries can be used as capacitors if you know, or capacitors can be used as batteries if you know how they function. You know, like I said, they can charge and discharge rapidly, but if you've already got the load connected to them, they can charge slowly because they meet resistance. It's just, you know, that sudden contact of those, you let all that power loose in one shot, but if it's already got the gate closed and it starts to allow that energy to leave there slowly, you don't have that issue, that sudden discharge. It's amazing, and you can charge them up real time and just use the capacitor alone as the battery. And when you incorporate batteries into the circuit, once again, that battery is just it's just there to complement the system. It's just there to basically be backup power for your system. So I've got complete systems that have absolutely no batteries involved in them, and I've showed them on my YouTube channel running so many times, and I would have thought somebody out there in the industry would have took a note of that. Absolutely no batteries, but I'm doing a lot of stuff with absolutely no batteries. You can run circuit boards with the same technology, without hurting them or anything. You're not gonna burn your stuff out unless you had the capacitor charged up and then connect it to your load. Well, then you'll blow it out. It can't handle that sudden rush of power. But once you get an understanding of how these things function, and you take a few precautions, make sure the capacitor is completely discharged, and then connect it to your load, and then start charging the thing up, then you'll find that it's pretty doggone interesting how it seems to work out real well. But anyway, I wanted to play a few things on here about different types of capacitors and batteries and different technologies, from lithium ion and then some, because there's a lot of technology out there that's already available. It's already available. And there's a lot of newer technology coming online. They're talking about making graphene batteries for Samsung. Well, doggone it, Robert Murray Smith's been making graphene batteries for a long time now. And so somebody's catching on to the technology, but obviously they're probably not going to give him credit for it. So, that's the way it works out here. But either way, it's still incredible technology. You're talking about using nanotube carbon and silicone and stuff like that in order to be able to get a larger storage capacity in a smaller package. Like I said earlier, I got an iPod in my pocket that I've been trying to drain the battery down for quite some time. That thing just won't go dead. And when you finally do get it down to where it takes a little while to come on, and then it finally leave it sitting long enough, and doggone it, if that thing don't charge itself back up. it charges it up enough to where the doggone memory is always saved in there. So plus they make these Apple iPods in such a way that it's almost impossible for you to get in there and work on them. You know, the batteries are soldered in, and any of the components. You know, Apple, they want to be able to sell you a new iPod when that one comes around. And if anything ever goes wrong with that, try getting it fixed. It's a nightmare, you know. And so they seal these things up. They make them so they'll hold their memory. You know, there's codes that got to go inside there, registration codes and all that kind of stuff, so that they can make sure you don't have a pirated version or whatever. And, you know, they do everything that they can to protect and hide their technology. But that battery that's inside of that iPod is pretty doggone impressive. You know, if it won't go dead, you know, no matter how hard you try, you can't seem to drain them completely dry. You know, when the battery finally does go dead, you got to replace the battery. And in order to replace that battery, you got to do a whole lot of crazy stuff to even get in there to put a new battery in that thing. So that by that time, you got to ask, is the device worth saving, or should I just buy me a new one? You know, and I'm sure that if you send it to Apple, they're probably either not going to work on it, or they're going to charge you an astronomical sum of money. And unless you're emotionally attached to this particular device, well, you know, you might as well just go ahead and buy a new one. And I think that is intentional. I believe they do that on purpose so that they can ensure that you always buy the next generation of whatever device that they're selling. So I want to go down through some of these right here and let you hear a little bit about these different battery technologies, and maybe jump in here and talk about it a bit.
The sound of a car starting is like music to the ears when it's minus 15 outside. Today's batteries are increasingly powerful and efficient, even at the most extreme temperatures. Kind of heartwarming, isn't it? While dissecting a frog in 1786, the Italian researcher, Galvani, noted that when his scalpel touched a leg muscle, it contracted from an electric current produced. Later, Volta believed the current was produced by the metal instruments, the animal being only a conductor. To prove it, he stacked discs of zinc and copper, connected by conductors, and fabric impregnated with an acid solution. And so, in 1800, the electric battery was born. Batteries power all kinds of electric motors. A new lithium metal polymer battery pack, such as this one, could soon power an electric automobile, as well as a hybrid vehicle. This battery will be made up of four components. It all starts with this lithium ingot, which weighs about 5 kilos. It's transformed into a thin sheet by this extrusion press that applies 400 tons of pressure. From it will exit a sheet that's only about 250 microns thick. The whole extrusion sequence is closely computer controlled. Extrusion is now completed. The metallic lithium sheet is the required 250 microns in thickness, or a quarter of a millimeter. The sheet has to be further thinned. Placed on a roller, it is carried to the laminator. At room temperature, it's thinned once again. In just 20 minutes, the 5-kilo ingot will have been transformed into a thin 250 micron sheet some 200 meters in length. This laminator completes the thinning of the sheet to between 20 and 40 microns. The resulting 2-kilometer long sheet will allow for the fabrication of 210 battery units. Lithium is a soft, sticky metal. For this reason, a polypropylene film has to be fixed on the lithium sheet. Without this protection, the sheet would adhere to itself and become unusable. The sheet will be used to make individual battery cells. Then these cells will be assembled in series and in parallel and inserted into modules of different shapes. To make an individual battery cell, the sheet has to be rolled up. This automated spooling machine winds up the lithium film in 26 revolutions. The wound-up sheet is put into a vacuum oven where the various layers adhere firmly to one another. This step lasts for about 90 minutes at 80 degrees centigrade. Here, a test is made. Using a voltmeter, the battery is checked to see that it produces the required 3.56 volts. Any problem can be detected here and corrected. A final quality check is made with this caliper, which precisely measures the thickness of the battery cell. The battery cells are then stored. Metallic plates are placed between them for the entire storage period. One more step remains, and that's the metallizing of the contacts. The battery cells are sent off to a fabrication facility in this container. The container is robotically handled. First, it's put into a protective tank. Then the metallizing of the contacts is done by spraying on molten metal. This takes just a few seconds, since the metal cools very quickly. The battery is now finished. It comprises four elements: lithium, which acts as the anode, a metallic oxide cathode, a dry solid polymer electrolyte, and a metallic current collector. All that remains to be done is the assembling of the individual battery cells into a module. It begins with the placing of individual cells onto one another and isolating them with foam so that they don't touch each other. These red sheets are actually heating elements, since the lithium metal polymer cells function at temperatures of between 40 and 80 degrees centigrade. All of the individual battery cells of the completed module are connected to an electronic card located above the module. The finished modules are connected to one another in series and in parallel to form a battery pack, which can be used in an electric automobile or a hybrid vehicle. Here we see these modules of a battery pack for a hybrid vehicle, an automobile that works with a gasoline-powered motor and an electric motor. This prototype battery was created for a totally electric vehicle. It surpasses heavy traditional lead-acid batteries that can't develop the same amount of electrical energy and which have much shorter lifespans.
Much shorter lifespans, old lead-acid batteries, as they say. Anyway, let's move along. I want to go into a little bit of how it actually works. That ought to be interesting. Lithium-ion
batteries. A portable power supply has become the lifeline of the modern technological world, especially the lithium-ion battery. Imagine a world where all cars are driven by induction motors and not internal combustion engines. Induction motors are far superior to IC engines in almost all engineering aspects, as well as being more robust and cheaper. Another huge disadvantage of IC engines is that they only produce usable torque in a narrow band of engine RPM. Considering all of these factors, induction motors are definitely the perfect choice for an automobile. However, the power supply for an induction motor is the real bottleneck in achieving a major induction motor revolution in the automobile industry. Let's explore how Tesla, with the help of lithium-ion cells, solved this issue, and why lithium-ion cells are going to become even better in the future. Let's take a Tesla cell out from the battery pack and break it down. You can see different layers of chemical compounds inside it. Tesla's lithium-ion battery works on an interesting concept associated with metals called the electrochemical potential. Electrochemical potential is the tendency of a metal to lose electrons. In fact, the very first cell, developed by Alessandro Volta more than 200 years ago, was based on the concept of electrochemical potential. A general electrochemical series is shown here. According to these values, lithium has the highest tendency to lose electrons, and fluorine has the least tendency to lose electrons. Volta took two metals with different electrochemical potentials, in this case zinc and silver, and created an external flow of electricity. Sony made the first commercial model of a lithium-ion battery in 1991. It was again based on the same concept of electrochemical potential. Lithium, which has the highest tendency to lose electrons, was used in lithium-ion cells. Lithium has only one electron in its outer shell, and always wants to lose this electron. Due to this reason, pure lithium is a highly reactive metal. It even reacts with water and air. The trick of a lithium-ion battery operation is the fact that lithium, in its pure form, is a reactive metal. But when lithium is part of a metal oxide, it is quite stable. Assume that somehow we have separated a lithium atom from this metal oxide. This lithium atom is highly unstable and will instantly form a lithium ion and an electron. However, lithium, as a part of metal oxide, is much more stable than this state. If you can provide two different paths for the electron and lithium ion flow between the lithium and the metal oxide, the lithium atom will automatically reach the metal oxide part. During this process, we have produced electricity from the electron flow through the one path. From these discussions, it is clear that we can produce electricity from this lithium metal oxide. If we firstly separate out lithium atoms from the lithium metal oxide, and secondly, guide the electrons lost from such lithium atoms through an external circuit. Let's see how lithium ion cells achieve these two objectives. A practical lithium ion cell also uses an electrolyte and graphite. Graphite has a layered structure. These layers are loosely bonded so that the separated lithium ions can be stored very easily there. The electrolyte, between the graphite and the metal oxide, acts as a guard which allows only lithium ions through. Now, let's see what happens when you connect a power source across this arrangement. The positive side of the power source will obviously attract and remove electrons from the lithium atoms of the metal oxide. These electrons flow through the external circuit as they cannot flow through the electrolyte and reach the graphite layer. In the meantime, the positively charged lithium ions will be attracted towards the negative terminal and will flow through the electrolyte. Lithium ions also reach the graphite layer space and get trapped there. Once all the lithium atoms reach the graphite sheet, the cell is fully charged. Thus, we have achieved the first objective, which is the lithium ions and electrons detached from the metal oxide. As we discussed, this is an unstable state, as if being perched on top of a hill. As soon as the power source is removed and a load is connected, the lithium ions want to go back to their stable state as a part of the metal oxide. Due to this tendency, the lithium ions move through the electrolyte and electrons via the load, just like sliding down a hill. Thus, we get an electrical current through the load. Please note that the graphite does not have a role in the chemical reaction of the lithium ion cells. Graphite is just a storage medium for lithium ions. If the internal temperature of the cell rises due to some abnormal condition, the liquid electrolyte will dry up and there will be a short circuit between the anode and cathode, and this can lead to a fire or an explosion. To avoid such a situation, an insulating layer, called a separator, is placed between the electrodes. The separator is permeable for the lithium ions because of its microporosity. In a practical cell, the graphite and metal oxide are coated onto copper and aluminum foils. The foils act as current collectors here, and the positive and negative tabs can be easily taken out from the current collectors.
I gotta pause that just for a second. So, the thing that, really gets on my nerves when I think about it, is because of the type of chemistry that they're talking about in these lithium ion batteries that, if they're not done properly or even cared for properly, they can actually catch fire. You can't even transport these things in some conditions. So there's some things that you need to know about these different types of batteries as far as safety hazards and stuff like that. But when you get back to capacitor technology, you don't have all these problems. There ain't no fire hazard with a capacitor because of the way that they're actually designed. So, lithium ion batteries are pretty doggone impressive. You just don't want to poke holes in them and get them wet. And then they have some safety backups in the deal about, how to, try to avoid this. But you've seen a few incidents, I'm sure, out there. If you've been out there on YouTube, people with these types of batteries built into different devices where these different devices overheated and got hot and started a fire or whatever. Sometimes in some unfortunate soul's pocket, like when them vapes are exploding and stuff like that, you know. It's really not that good of an idea. But, you know, I guess you shouldn't be fearful of that type of technology. It's going to get better as we go. I mean, battery technology is advancing so rapidly it ain't even funny. And it's a good thing. But, you know, I'm saying to everybody right now, we've already got exactly what we need for energy storage. We just need to understand a couple different things on how energy actually travels, for one. And, you know, being able to use it more efficiently. If you think about an electric car, and you think about electric generators, all, let's say an all-electric generator, which people have been trying to do forever and a day, these doggone cars and the technology that they've got, if it's got enough power to literally pull the weight of that car, the weight of the batteries, the weight of all the passengers inside there, up and down hills and all that kind of stuff, that's a whole lot of power. Now imagine, instead of trying to pull that power, you know, with the car, use all the internals of that car to actually supplement those things such as, wind turbines and solar panels and stuff like that, and using that drivetrain, so to speak, to actually generate your power after that. So you're actually ramping up the power potential of what the wind turbine's actually capable of doing. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there. Let's get back to this for a second.
An organic salt of lithium acts as the electrolyte, and it is coated onto the separator sheet. All these three sheets are wound onto the cylinder around a central steel core, thus making the cell more compact. A standard Tesla cell has a voltage of between 3 and 4.2 volts. Many such Tesla cells are connected in series and in a parallel fashion to form a module. 16 such modules are connected in series to form a battery pack in the Tesla car. Lithium-ion cells produce a lot of heat during the operation, and a high temperature will decay the cell's performance. A battery management system is used to manage the temperature, state of charge, voltage protection, and cell health monitoring of such a huge number of cells. Glycol-based cooling technology is used in a Tesla battery pack. The BMS adjusts the glycol flow rate to maintain the optimum battery temperature. Voltage protection is another crucial job of the BMS.
So you gotta have a protection device in order to be able to circulate some coolant through there, in order to keep these batteries from getting too hot. If you go look at some of the supercar technology out there that uses electric transmissions and stuff like that, actually got a separate cooling system for the electrical part. They actually have a separate exhaust for the heat to escape from just the electrical part. And been saying it forever and a day, if it's getting hot, you're doing it wrong. And so with that said, this type of technology, these lithium-ion batteries, while they're really super powerful, you actually have to take some of that doggone energy and utilize that extra energy in order to keep these things from getting too hot. But if you was using that battery technology in a different way, then you would have a lot of power on time demand, as far as when the sun ain't shining or the wind isn't going. I'll get into that later.
For example, in these three cells, during charging, the higher capacity cell will be charged more than the rest. To solve this problem, the BMS uses something called cell balancing. In cell balancing, all the cells are allowed to charge and discharge equally, thus protecting them from over and under voltage. This is where Tesla scores over Nissan battery technology. The Nissan Leaf has a huge battery cooling issue due to the big size of its cells and the absence of an active cooling method. The small multiple cell design has one more advantage. During high power demand situations, the discharge strain will be divided equally among each of the cells. instead of many small cells, if we had used a single giant cell, it would have been put under a lot of strain, and eventually it would suffer a premature death. By using many small cylindrical cells, the manufacturing technology of which is already well established, Tesla clearly made a winning decision. There is a magical phenomenon which happens within lithium-ion cells during their very first charge that saves the lithium-ion cells from sudden death. Let's see what it is. The electrons in the graphite layer are a major problem. The electrolyte will be degraded if the electrons come into contact with it. However, the electrons never come into contact with the electrolyte due to an accidental discovery, the solid electrolyte interface. When you charge the cell for the first time, as explained above, the lithium ions move through the electrolyte. Here, in this journey, solvent molecules in the electrolyte cover the lithium ions. When they reach the graphite, the lithium ions, along with the solvent molecules, react with the graphite and form a layer there called the SEI layer. The formation of this SEI layer is a blessing in disguise. It prevents any direct contact between the electrons and the electrolyte, thus saving the electrolyte from degradation. In this overall process of the formation of the SEI layer, it will consume 5% of the lithium. The remaining 95% of the lithium contributes to the main working of the battery. Even though the SEI layer was an accidental discovery, with over 2 decades of research and development, scientists have optimized the thickness and chemistry of the SEI layer for maximum cell performance. It is amazing to find out that those electronic gadgets we used around 2 decades back did not use lithium-ion batteries. With its amazing speed of growth, the lithium-ion battery market is expected to become a $90 billion annual industry within a few years. The currently achieved number of charge-discharge cycles of a lithium-ion battery is around 3,000. Great minds across the globe are putting their best efforts into increasing this to 10,000 cycles. That means you would not have to worry about replacing the battery in your car for 25 years. Millions of dollars have already been invested in research into replacing the storage medium graphite with silicon. If this is successful, the energy density of the lithium-ion cell will increase by more than 5 times. We hope this video provided you with a clear conceptual understanding about lithium.
So, did you hear the part where that you wouldn't have to replace your battery for 25 years? That's pretty intriguing. So, it's going to come a day, folks, when generating electricity for your home usage is going to be so ridiculously simple. But I guarantee you that in the meantime, they're going to try to figure out ways in order to make it not legal for you to generate your own power or have said devices that would last for 25 years in your homes for whatever reason. They might just say it's either a health hazard or a fire hazard or whatever. They'll find some way in order to ensure that you still end up having to pay the man. That's why I think you got to get the drop on them fast, you know, while you still have access to this technology before, you know, all the craziness comes in. And, you know, start building some devices that you can use, you know, basically under the hat, so to speak, without asking the Big Daddy government for permission. We already have all the pieces of the puzzle necessary to resolve the so-called energy crisis or whatever this environmental thing that they're talking about, you know, the climate change madness or whatever. You know, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm thinking, if these folks really cared about the environment, then I'm thinking they probably would be paying a lot more attention to guys like me when I'm telling them, you know, look, you got the answer right there underneath your nose, man. All you got to do is pick it up and run with it. But once again, it's just like every other industry out there, whether it be the food industry, the drug industry, the medical industry, you know, the energy industry, they're in it to make money. They're in it to win it, so to speak. And so we need to be the same. We need to be in it to win it. we got technologies available to us. I'm excited about getting my new lab together. I still, everything's moving along slowly because of financial deals that I'm working my way through. I got too many irons in the fire, if you understand what I'm saying. And so, you know, it's taken me a little longer than I planned. But the moment I get that thing done and accomplished, I'm going to be a happy camper because I'm going to be able to show some people in real time. Put this all into perspective where you can actually see what it is that I'm saying and a different way of how to actually use energy in a more efficient manner so that your devices aren't getting destroyed. And as far as energy storage, heck, that's the simplest portion of the deal. Been trying to tell people things for years, but not everybody's really interested in paying attention, I guess. And so they would rather try to charge you a carbon tax or whatever, you know, some sort of craziness. But the moment I get that lab up and going, I'm going to show you some cool stuff. I'm excited about that. Hopefully my YouTube channel will stick around long enough for that, because you know how YouTube is. They're trying to run everybody out. They want to turn YouTube into something that it wasn't before, and I guess they want to make it like cable TV or something like that. So channels like mine will be going by the wayside, but I'm working on a place to start storing videos, maybe at Shaziz Radio or Shaziz.net. I'll start storing actual videos that you'll be able to download if you're interested in seeing them. But anyway, let's keep rolling here.
There's a revolution taking place in the world today. It's a clean energy revolution. And Smart Battery is at the forefront, with innovation that's truly changing the game. But how do our state-of-the-art lithium iron phosphate batteries become reality? And what does the future hold for Smart Battery? A look into our factory holds the answers. Smart Battery builds advanced lithium ion batteries for any application, from 12 volts to 1,000 volts. We mainly focus on manufacturing our line of 12-volt lithium ion batteries, specifically designed to replace lead-acid battery technology. The Smart Battery Factory has nearly 3,000 employees, including over 300 engineers and research staff. Our cell manufacturing plant is one of the most advanced lithium iron phosphate battery factories in the world. Our latest plant, finished in 2015, is currently the most advanced in the industry. This factory is equipped with a fully automatic production process that builds thousands of high-performance lithium-ion battery cells every day and can produce over 500,000 cells per day in full production. Our team of engineers and researchers have been continuously improving the performance and safety of this technology for the past decade. Smart Battery lithium-ion batteries are used in thousands of applications around the world and continue to set the standard for this technology. In 2013, a scholar workstation for application materials was established, attracting hundreds of the world's best technicians. Smart Battery lithium iron phosphate batteries are among the safest on our planet. Our cells are bolted together, which adds rigid strength and conductivity to the battery pack. This design is highly awarded for its capability to handle extreme vibration to maintain safety and performance under tough conditions. Each Smart Battery cell is built in an explosion-proof stainless steel case and manufactured with a flame-retardant electrolyte. In the unlikely event a cell would begin to overheat, an internal thermal fuse will disconnect, taking that cell offline, while allowing the rest of the battery to continue operating with little reduced capacity. Smart Battery lithium-ion batteries are built by combining multiple 3.0-volt 5-amp-hour centrifugal cells in series and in parallel to create the specified voltage and capacity. Each battery pack is built with cells that are matched together based on 10 consistencies, including resistance, impedance, charge and discharge curves, along with several other factors that are a critical step in our battery pack manufacturing process to ensure long cycle life and reliability. Our latest manufacturing plant is equipped with a fully automatic production process, which is the most advanced in the industry, improving efficiency by more than 5 times. Smart Battery lithium-ion batteries are manufactured to be used as a drop-in replacement for any application that uses lead-acid, AGM, or gel batteries.
Whether you have a small boat, large yacht, or RV, you can replace your lead batteries with a smart battery. Whether it's a simple 12-volt drop-in replacement or a custom lithium-ion battery for aerospace and industrial applications, Smart Battery's team of engineers can help turn your next battery project into a simple plug-and-play solution, taking the complexity out of upgrading your batteries and integrating them into your application. Smart Battery's breakthrough lithium iron phosphate battery solutions are green and non-hazardous compared to toxic lead-acid batteries. Along with being 70% lighter and lasting more than 10 years or up to 5,000 cycles, it makes sense to buy a smart battery. Easily upgrade your RV, boat, or commercial equipment with Smart Battery lithium ion technology.
So they said that these batteries are lighter. They're smart. Of course, I don't know if you heard the date that their factory was finished in 2005. Is that what that was? Here it is, 2020. So this ain't even new technology, man. So you can imagine how these types of battery technologies have made advancements in the deal. Like I said earlier, I got an iPod in my pocket and I've been trying to drain the battery down for about a week now. And I just can't get that battery to go completely dead. I need to go dead so that I can reset the memory inside there. So I can restore the doggone iPod. Because they, you know, when they make these things, they don't want anybody tinkering around inside of them. So they glue the thing shut. They solder the batteries in. And they make it almost impossible for you to restore it, you know, without their specific software, if you understand what I'm saying. Plus, you know, then you'd have to, you know, re-register it and all that kind of craziness. So the industry out there, they got a few secrets that they're not telling you about as far as battery technology and stuff like that. They don't want these things to go completely dead, you know. And so that ought to be something, that ought to be some sort of sign there about where we actually stand as far as technology and advancements when you got something like that in your pocket. Now, when we get down to the deal where we start putting all these pieces of the puzzle in the right order to show you know, how to use energy more efficiently. If it can be scaled up, it can be scaled down. I've already been doing this for a long time. I know it works. Now it's a matter of showing people in a way that they can understand that the technology, off-the-shelf technology that they have access to right now, will resolve the problem. Earlier I mentioned about, imagine you got a electric car, and that electric car, it's got to pull the entire weight of that car. It's got to pull the batteries and all the passengers and luggage inside there. And those things are pretty doggone strong. When you're using a battery, you know, whatever load you got on it, the load is as simple as how many people you got that thing actually has to carry around, how much weight it has to, you know, how hard it actually has to work. But imagine if that thing didn't have to work hard at all, then it would be more efficient. You know, if it wasn't pulling around the load of the passengers and all that, it'd be a whole lot more efficient. And with the modern day, brushless motors out there, DC motors or AC motors, either one, doesn't matter. But just go to DC right now. DC brushless motors, those things are incredible technology with some serious RPMs. And once you understand about, you know, how generators actually function and throw a few tricks of the trade in there, such as things like Muddy used to do with his actual flux wind turbine, and you're starting to pull this power off in a different manner than you ever did before, that battery that is actually running that electric motor doesn't even have to work hard. It's basically just at idle speed, even though it's screaming along at some serious RPMs, but it's producing a massive amount of power. And from that point on, you know, it's all storage. You know, you store it, you put a buffer in between every single load, every single stage of it, so that any energy that is going down the line doesn't ever hit resistance and start backing up. It's all the same power, don't matter how you look at it. Whether it's high voltage or low voltage or whatever, it's all the same power. Depending on which frequency range it's running at, it's that's the only difference is how fast it's moving. And the power companies already figured this out. They also figured out ways to slow it down, store it, smooth it out, and all that kind of jazz so that you can actually use it in your house. You couldn't use the power coming down that power line in your house. It'd set fire to your house. It'd burn right through the insulation of the wires and burn your house down. Obviously, that's not something you want to do. So, the power companies figured out a way to dump the excess energy without causing any damage, or use that excess energy to send on down the line to the next transformer in line. So what I've been showing you is essentially what they've been doing for years, where they send that high voltage down the line and they understand about capacitance and storage and all that kind of stuff, and stepping power up and stepping power down. Those coils don't care where that magnetic field comes from. And that magnetic field does not have to extend way out beyond that transformer in order to make that transformer do what it is. It's just looking for nothing more than the changes in polarity. It's all it's looking for. I've already proven that with a 5-volt input. I'm able to push out about 80 to 100 volts out the other side, just with a 5-volt input. So, imagine doing that with one of those drivetrains from an electric car that doesn't even really necessarily have to work hard. All you're doing is using the energy in a different way, and then you're storing it and all this kind of stuff. Well, you can start seeing what it is that I've been saying real easy after all that. Let's keep going here.
The technology we're bringing to market would be able to boost energy density by about 20%, and then over the next couple of years, we'll push it to about 40% improvement. The existing chemistry improves maybe 2% every couple of years, so we're really bringing a new battery chemistry to market for the first time in about 30 years. As I spent more time looking at batteries, it really turns out to be one of the hardest problems in the world.
Since its introduction in the 1990s, the rechargeable lithium battery has been the standard for everyday tech devices and electric vehicle power. As the world races toward an electric future, it needs something better to keep pace. Battery startups trying to build better batteries, ones with lower costs and better performance, believe big improvements are coming.
The lithium-ion chemistry has really reached its theoretical limits. Sila is a materials company that was founded with the mission of moving us to a new generation of battery chemistry, and that new generation of battery chemistry will enable further advances in energy density. That'll allow electric vehicles to go further, be cheaper, as well as make for better consumer devices.
Sila is one of several startups that received major funding to continue working on their technology. Now, after about 10 years of research, they'll soon be ready for the commercial spotlight.
Things like wearable fitness trackers, smartwatches, wireless earbuds, cell phones, but it really is going to take us quite a lot of scaling up before we're in electric vehicles. And the hope is really to start in electric vehicles where we can deliver the highest performance, and then as we're able to produce the material at a larger and larger scale, bring down its cost, and further bring down the cost of the battery, we would want to be in every passenger electric vehicle produced.
To do that, Sila has replaced the graphite in today's batteries with silicone to create silicone anode batteries. They say this change can deliver a better performance from a cheaper product.
The current lithium-ion battery uses what is called an intercalation chemistry. It has a graphite anode material and a metal oxide cathode material. And those materials are then assembled and wound into a cell that would either go into your electric vehicle or your cell phone. What we do differently is we replace the graphite anode that's in the battery today with a proprietary material that we've synthesized. And that material is able to store energy more densely than graphite, and so it allows us to pack more energy into the same cell. The simplest way to think about that is if we can store twice as much energy, let's say, in the battery that you use in your electric vehicle, then you need half as many batteries to go the same distance. And if you need half as many batteries, it'll cost you about half as much. This could mean longer lasting gadgets, cheaper electric vehicles, and ultimately, a cleaner power grid. What grid operators and utilities are going to want is predictable solar and predictable wind. And the way you get to predictable solar and predictable wind is to have energy storage coupled with it so that whenever the wind is blowing, you're charging the battery, and whenever the utility needs the power, you're discharging it. So we think that this chemistry is a huge accelerator for being able to deploy renewables from a few percentage points on the grid to replacing most fossil fuels around the world.
The long development timeline for these startups is a sign of how difficult pushing battery technology can be.
We're in our eighth year of operation as a business. We've raised about $125 million today just to get to a place where we've solved the chemistry problem. It's that hard. It's taken almost a decade just to make the technology work. And so now the challenge shifts for us to really scaling it up. And it requires everybody to work together to get to the right answer. We have a deep belief that new battery chemistries become the standard after some years. We've seen that before. And so as we start to launch this chemistry, so long as we can get our production volumes up, then we expect that this chemistry or these kinds of chemistries will become the de facto standard for the next generation or so.
It's really kind of ridiculous you can't get it done with $125 million. Huh. That's a heck of a lot of money, folks. $125 million. Hey, I'd have had it done with a fraction of that. It's just, oh man. You know, they're looking for some holy grail chemistry when they've already got everything that they need. But yet, you know, everybody got to have their own patent so they can have their own money and all that kind of stuff. We're going to have so many different batteries. You know, they're gonna mess around and actually give you free energy without even realizing what it is that they've done. As far as I'm concerned, we're already there. You know, all you gotta understand is what nature's been doing all along, and then know how to tap into that. That's so ridiculously simple. I mean, you know, I look back at some of the technologies from the old days all the way through to the new days. There's not a whole lot different that they've been doing, with the exception of, you know, the chemistry involved in the different types of battery technologies. You know, but the capacitor technology, that's probably the best one for alternative energy. That's probably the best one for the future. And these modern-day supercapacitors that they got, they're doggone incredible. And the capabilities of what they're able to do, as opposed to the you know, regular batteries, it's mind blowing. Anyway, let's keep moving along here. This is that ReZap secret battery.
If you have batteries powering devices at home or work, then help this doctor to save more lives worldwide and make the environment a safer and better place for our children. Each time you replace a throwaway battery, you're spending money you could be saving and adding to the pollution of the environment. Batteries contain a deadly cocktail of heavy metals and toxic chemicals that poison our planet. An estimate of 15 billion are dumped each year, with many ending up in landfills or shipped abroad, where unregulated processes, often including child labor, working in life-threatening conditions. Want to halve your household battery costs and help reduce battery waste? ReZap Battery Doctor is the world's first multi-chemistry battery recharger for ordinary batteries. The revolutionary patented ReZap technology lets you safely recharge dead, non-rechargeable batteries, reducing pollution and saving you money. ReZap is the simple alternative to throwing away used batteries at home, work, and for any organization. ReZap is so versatile and clever. It supports all common battery sizes, including 6-volt lantern batteries. There's also a built-in battery tester which tests the condition of each battery. And it's so safe and easy to use. Just put used batteries in and ReZap will take care of everything. No buttons, no switches, no mistakes. That's smart. Using ReZap is simple, economical, and environmentally friendly. It consumes just 10 watts, which is a fraction of the power used by a light bulb. If you're wondering why battery manufacturers don't tell you about ReZap, it's because they want to keep selling you replacement batteries. Imagine the money you'll save. ReZap pays for itself many times over. Please, join us in our quest to reduce battery waste and become an advocate for ReZap. By purchasing ReZap, making friends and family aware of its benefits for the environment, you will help us achieve our campaign goal. You will also be saving money as you reuse your old batteries rather than sending them to landfill. ReZap used wherever batteries are used. Help us save more lives by stopping the environmental poisoning caused by throwing away household batteries. Invest in ReZap and spread the word. Let's join hands, share the love of the planet, and shout out to your friends and community to join in the ReZap campaign. Lead by example and order your ReZap battery doctor now.
All right, so that's a product called ReZap that they're claiming will regenerate old non-rechargeable batteries. And I do believe the concept has already been done to some extent before. They've got battery rejuvenators out there, but if that's a real product and it really works, then that is an amazing thing, because that means that all these batteries that you buy that aren't necessarily rechargeable can be recharged. And I can understand how it is that they would actually, how this thing could actually function by the way that your recharging is. You charge them slowly without that current, you know, you can get these things to rejuvenate themselves. There used to be some tricks back in the old days to get a little bit more life out of your batteries, but this product right here, I'm going to be looking into it to see, and I'm going to test it, and I'll also tell everybody once I find out about whether or not this thing actually does what it says it's going to do. I'll be the best one out there helping to advocate for it. So, you know, with that said, I'm gonna check into that. I will throw a link into their doggone website. I'll throw it into the Super Chat room and People for People chat room, so if you want to take a look at it before I get around to it, then you can look at it too and see if it works like they say it does. If it does, man, that's pretty amazing. You can buy batteries pretty doggone cheap anymore. Well, that's not necessarily cheap. They seem to be getting a little higher on some batteries, but anyway, it still would be a plus that non-rechargeable batteries could actually be salvaged instead of kicked off to the dump, so to speak. So I will I'll go ahead and post this link. I'm saying I haven't tested this thing out, but if this works like they say it will do, then it is an amazing device out there that would be worth putting, you know, in your survival gear there, so to speak. Anyway, so let me see where we're at here. Battery technology, you know, there's so many different things going on in battery technology. I think this next one talks about fluoride batteries. So let's hear what they get to say.
Lithium-ion batteries changed our world by delivering us hours of energy in a small, lightweight package. But you know what? My phone battery only lasts a day, and that is not enough. I need more. Luckily, scientists are already on it, and have been working for decades on a new battery design that could last up to 8 times longer, leaving lithium in the dust. Introducing fluoride batteries. Okay, before you yell at me in the comments, no, these aren't ready yet. You're not going to be able to watch this video and then buy a fluoride battery online. Science is slow. Everything takes time. But this is a huge, exciting breakthrough, and I have the right to be excited. First, a quick vocab breakdown. Fluoride is the negative ion of the element fluorine. That's also why compounds containing fluorine, like the sodium fluoride in toothpaste, are called fluorides. Fluoride batteries have been of interest since the 1970s, when researchers first started experimenting with the material in solid-state designs. And though the tests only worked under extremely high temperatures, fluoride held their interest due to its capacity to create a battery with a high energy density. It could store more charge in the same amount of space. A typical lithium-ion battery has three parts, an anode and a cathode, separated by an electrolyte. As the battery discharges, positive lithium ions flow from the anode across the electrolyte into the cathode. This leaves free electrons in the anode that create your current. When you charge your lithium battery, the reverse happens. Ions in the cathode flow back into the anode. Fluoride batteries work a little differently. Instead of relying on the transfer of positive lithium ions, fluoride batteries use negative fluoride ions to generate their current. The reason these batteries have such a high energy density comes down to the molecular structure of metal fluorides. In a metal fluoride, the ratio of fluorine atoms to metal atoms is high. For example, in copper fluoride, two fluorine atoms are combined with just one copper atom. That means for every copper atom, you get two fluoride ions that can move two electrons. In a typical lithium battery, however, you only get one lithium atom for every two oxygens, one cobalt. That means for every two oxygen atoms and one cobalt atom, there's only one lithium ion that can only move one electron. The copper fluoride gives you more ions that can move more electrons and does it without increasing overall mass. That means batteries of the same weight can hold more charge and last up to eight times longer. On top of improved energy density, replacing lithium with fluoride might also make these batteries less likely to overheat. Some scientists also say the materials needed to make a fluoride battery could be more environmentally friendly to harvest than the lithium and cobalt that we currently use. But all of these great benefits rest on us being able to get fluoride batteries to work. And until this latest breakthrough, we could really only do that with solid electrolytes that functioned upwards of 150 degrees Celsius. Now, though, scientists at NASA, Caltech, and Honda have developed a new fluoride-conducting liquid electrolyte that functions at room temperature. They paired it with a copper lanthanum trifluoride cathode and a metal anode and created a prototype fluoride battery that discharged and recharged at room temperature. It's a big deal, y'all. But now for the reason why you can't buy them yet. This concept proved room temperature fluoride batteries are possible, but they'll still need to be tinkered with and streamlined to get that super high energy density that they promise. There are also some other complications that need to be worked out as well, like the fact that a complicated coating is required so the electrolyte doesn't literally dissolve the metal electrode. All of that aside, it is a huge step towards a functional, scalable fluoride battery. And while it will take time to work out the kinks, this could be the start of a whole new era for energy storage. And I, for one, am here for it. While we wait for fluoride batteries, why don't you put those lithium ones to good use by building your very own website? Domain.com has all your website needs, including .com and .net domain names and intuitive website builders. These guys are awesome. They're affordable, reliable, and have all the tools you need to build a new website. And if you want to brand yourself online, Domain.com has over 300 domain extensions to fit your needs, from .pizza to .space. The guys at Domain.com love Elements, and to show their love, they're giving you 20% off their already affordable prices. Use coupon code Elements at Domain.com's checkout for 20% off. When you think domain names, think Domain.com. You can't give your friends a fluoride battery, but you can give them a cool science t-shirt. Check out our new Teespring store below the description where you can find this shirt and awesome science-themed designs. For more on batteries, check out this playlist. And don't forget to subscribe for all the best battery news. Thanks for watching.
All right, so, you know, they're talking about a different type of battery there, especially more environmentally friendly. Anyway, I did look up on doggone eBay. They do have those ReZap battery chargers on there for different prices and different shipping. So I'm going to be taking a peek at that and see if I get one of those sent over to me. And then I'll give that thing a test to see if, because I got a lot of batteries. I don't just throw batteries in the trash. I actually save and store them. Figured they might come in handy one day, and I guess I might be right. So we'll find out. So, let's see, moving right along right here.
My name is Ulrich Rappe, CEO of Nahua Technologies. It's located here in the south of France, in the region known as Provence. Not only a beautiful place to arrive to work in the morning, but also working on some exciting technology that's changing the future of energy storage.
Nahua Technologies is developing a brand new material for storing electricity. With this material, we are able to manufacture some innovative supercapacitors and also electrodes for the next generation of lithium batteries. If we take the analogy of athletics, for instance, an ultracapacitor would be a sprinter. It will be recharged very fast and can be discharged very fast. A lithium battery is much more like a marathon runner. So what we are doing at Nahua is something that is exactly in between.
With our technology, we can have five times more power and five times more energy than the existing technologies out there. We can charge and discharge our technology in a matter of seconds, and we can do a million cycles. So you have something that can last a long time and can charge and discharge very fast.
The basis of this technology starts with the material. The material is made of vertically aligned carbon nanotube. Unlike any other technology, which is basically based on powders, our material is like a kind of cage which is made of trillions of all vertically aligned carbon nanotube. A nanotube is a tiny tube of carbon with a very small diameter, typically in our case it's 5 nanometers, and a very long length, 100 micron. So it's a little bit like playing with a spaghetti that has 1 kilometer long. So you can have trillions of this nanotube in a square centimeter. We have developed a very specific and patented method to produce our electrode based on vertically aligned carbon nanotube. All these advantages allow us to demonstrate and develop a very specific coating process to grow vertically aligned carbon nanotube on the two sides of an aluminium or a copper foil.
What we use is abundantly available and it's natural. We're not using any materials that you can say are negative environment lab spec like cobalt that you have in lithium ion batteries, or materials that you can consider to be rare earth materials, so they're not abundantly available. This technology can go very, very many places. Power tools, automated guided vehicles, which is what you have in logistics and material handling in warehouses, to automotive applications. All those devices need some power burst and ability to recoup energy. Another advantage of the ultra-fast carbon battery is that it's very durable. So you could see that this technology can be used in space, in the oceans, perhaps in drilling applications as well, and will not be affected by the temperature and the extreme environments that it's exposed to. Another market that's really taking off at the moment is what they call the Internet of Things. This is, of course, many different applications, but the area that we see a lot of opportunities anywhere there's any communication, especially within tracking and security applications. We are investing in the production equipment to have a production line operational by 2020 and delivering off of that line hundreds of thousands of cells.
We have a project to develop what we call a structural battery with the idea to integrate a storage function into a composite material. The battery is directly into the structure, into the shell of your car, into the shell of your iPhone, or into the shell of the wing of a plane.
So, once again, get even more technology. The carbon nanotubes, it's already been worked on. Robert Murray Smith has been working with graphene technology for a long time. And like they were saying in there, the carbon, since we live in a carbon-based world, you ain't got no problems finding that. You don't have to destroy a lot of stuff in order to get that. So with that said, let's keep moving.
Welcome to EV Tech Explained. Today I'll be introducing supercapacitors. Supercapacitors are energy storage devices capable of delivering power at much higher rates than batteries, and have been recently used in Toyota's TS040 Le Mans car in the energy recovery system. This video will briefly explain what supercapacitors are, give a detailed step-by-step guide to how they function, and discuss some typical uses of the technology. Supercapacitors are charge storage devices that look similar to batteries. In comparison to batteries, supercapacitors have low energy capacity, typically 10 to 100 times less than the state-of-the-art lithium-ion battery. However, they are able to deliver 10 to 100 times more power than a state-of-the-art lithium-ion battery. I will briefly explain the difference between power and energy in my following slides. Whilst batteries typically last 1,000 charge and discharge cycles before they lose much of their capacity, supercapacitors will typically last 1 million charge and discharge cycles because they function via the physical movement of ions and not via chemical reactions as a battery does. To help understand the difference between power and energy, let's use an analogy of a bucket of water with a hole in it. Water can only leave the bucket via the hole. The rate at which water can flow out of the bucket is analogous to the power. The amount of water that can be held within the bucket is analogous to the energy capacity. A larger hole in the bucket increases the power, whilst increasing the volume of the bucket increases the energy that can be stored. Therefore, by this analogy, a supercapacitor is a small bucket with a big hole, whereas a battery is a big bucket with a small hole. Before explaining how supercapacitors function, it is necessary to introduce its internal components. A cross-section of a supercapacitor is seen in the image on the left, and on the right-hand side is an illustration of a simplified structure. The cell contains two identical carbon electrodes held apart by a paper-based separator, and the electrodes are both connected to aluminium current collectors. This simplified structure is redrawn in this schematic, as well as the positive and negative ions from the liquid electrolyte. The image on the left shows the ion arrangement in an uncharged cell, whereas the right-hand side shows the ion arrangement in a fully charged cell. Let's go through the charge storage process step by step. To charge up our uncharged supercapacitor, we begin by connecting the positive and negative terminals to an energy source. Assuming we're looking at just the negative electrode, the carbon electrode becomes negatively charged. An electrical field is generated near the electrode, attracting positive ions and repelling negative ions. The opposite is happening simultaneously at the positive electrode. The counter ions, which in this case are the positive ions, absorb to the surface of the electrode, and a very intense electric field is now holding the electrons from the electrode and the ions in the electrolyte close to one another. This intense electric field is where the cell is storing its energy as potential energy. So, to recap, we apply potential to the electrodes, an electric field is generated within the cell, the counter ions absorb to the electrode surface, and the electrons and ions are subsequently held in an intense electric field which stores the energy which we are putting into the cell. Now, if we were to discharge our cell by removing electrons through the external circuit, at the electrode-electrolyte interface, we would have an excess of positive ions. Therefore, a positive ion is repelled in order to return the interface to a state of charge neutrality. That is, the negative charge and the positive charge is balanced. supercapacitors are not a substitute for batteries. Their characteristics make them suitable for different applications. So, which applications are suitable? Applications requiring high power with moderate to low energy requirements, such as frames and
I gotta pause that for a second, because he said that supercapacitors weren't suitable replacement for batteries, where that I have to disagree with this portion of the video, because I've already proven in my experiments that you can use those supercapacitors as batteries. If you understand how that energy is being stored and how you're pulling that power off, then there's no problem with it at all. Matter of fact, there's videos out there on YouTube where people have taken or replaced their lead acid battery from their vehicle with boost packs that they made with supercapacitor technology. So, you know, where there's a lot of good information in some of these videos out here, you got to you got to step back and look at the big picture and understand you know, what you're seeing. And with that said, all these videos are posted over there at the Super chat room if you ever want to go back and watch any of them. So just throw that in there as well.
Converters are very suitable. They can also be used as voltage support of high energy devices such as fuel cells and batteries. In fact, Honda used a band of ultracapacitors in the Honda FCX fuel cell vehicle to protect the fuel cell from rapid voltage fluctuations. Furthermore, because supercapacitors are very reliable, they are typically used in applications that are described as maintenance-free, such as space travel and wind turbines. They are also extensively used in smartphones to power the camera flash and for uninterruptible power supplies as a power backup. Mazda also uses them to capture waste energy in their IE loop energy recovery system, as used on the Mazda 6 and on the Mazda 3. If you'd like a detailed explanation of the way the IE loop system functions, or any other EV tech, please leave a comment and I will do my best to create a video on that topic.
Alrighty then, so let me see here. I think that's the same, hopefully.
Welcome to EV Tech.
Ah, yep, so I clicked on the same one. Ah. Anyway, just outside of all the high-tech terminology you use to explain different concepts of how these battery technologies are working, we're getting into some serious energy storage, and it's only getting better by the year. So when you get down the understanding of how, you know, generating power, how easy it is to generate power and voltages and stuff like that, these new technologies right here are going to come into play as to how long you can actually store these to run your entire house. So let's keep rolling here.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Fully Charged, this time coming from Tallinn in Estonia, an amazing country. If you get the chance, do come and see it. We've been brought here by the European Investment Bank, which is fantastic that we've had this opportunity, and we're coming to see a company that are creating ultracapacitors, but they're doing it in a country that really has a most remarkable history of tech startups, of tech innovation and creativity, starting from a really low starting point at the end of the Soviet era in the early 1990s. They've become one of the leading tech countries in the world. Where was Skype invented? It was invented in Estonia.
We're taking you on a tour of Estonia. That's what all this music's about.
I've come here to find out what ultracapacitors are, and I'm really hoping I'm kind of roughly in the right place. So, Tabby, first of all, thank you so much for inviting us to come and see what you're doing. It's very impressive. But what I really want to do is get back to the sort of super basics. Ultracapacitors 101 for the complete novice.
If you look at ultracapacitors, then we are fast energy storage components, whereas batteries are slow energy storage components. Because if you take ultracapacitor, when it takes 2 to 3 seconds to fully recharge ultracapacitor, secondly, ultracapacitors have 1 million deep charge discharge cycles. We all know that if you look at Tesla batteries, for example, the graphite NMC, what Panasonic manufactures, it has about 3,000 to 5,000 cycles.
So that's you charge it, then you drain it, then you charge. Yes. You can do that about 3,000 to 5,000 times.
Yes, and with ultracapacitors, you can do it 1 million times.
A million times.
And we have done it in real life, even over 1 million cycles.
Wow.
And now the key thing is that ultracapacitors are not the silver bullet, because the total energy content in ultracapacitors is smaller than in batteries, meaning that you can get the energy in really quickly, like braking energy, and this is a perfect application, because you don't brake for 1 hour, your braking cycle lasts usually about 5 seconds, and the same goes for acceleration. Now, if you look at ultracapacitors, then they are actually not usually competing against batteries. But what is more widely used in the industry is the combination. Because now you have this peak power device, ultracapacitors, you recuperate the braking energy, you use it for acceleration, but you can downsize the battery pack because you don't need to oversize that for the maximum power. And we have seen that in terms of initial cost, this leads to over 10% reduction in cost. Secondly, to higher efficiency because you take the peak loads with ultracapacitors. And thirdly, and perhaps more importantly, you can increase the battery life by up to 2 times. Because what kills the battery lifetime is this type of high peak powers and overheating. And ultracapacitors takes that away. But if you look at the technology roadmap of ultracapacitors, when we see that 5 to 7 years from now, almost all new vehicles will have a lithium-ion battery pack for long-range driving and ultracapacitor pack for fast charging. And fast charging, when you can get in few tens of seconds the initial 50 kilometers of range. Because if you take away that the last great entry barrier of fast charging, when we are not only addressing passenger vehicle market, but for example, if you look at buses, trucks, even industrial equipment. 2 weeks ago, I was in Paris, and if you go to Champs-Élysées, then actually you have buses which have ultracapacitors on board and also ultracapacitors in the charging station. And this is already happening in real life.
Wow.
If you go to China, to Shanghai, you already have these type of systems on the road. But in our case, what was really important in terms of scaling was also the push, the policy push for European Investment Bank, because we had raised already a significant amount of private capital. And the fact that we could leverage that with EIB support allowed us to start 2 factories in Estonia and Germany, increase the headcount, and more importantly, increase our impact in terms of revenues, in terms of customers signed.
Because now one of the things that I'm fascinated by, having heard a lot about it, but not being sure what it is graphene. You're using curved graphene materials. Is that the description for it?
Exactly.
Right.
And now, if you look at our material, it's a graphene composite material, and that allows us actually to achieve the price advantage. We have developed a composite material which can be scaled, and where we have already proved today, and I think most importantly, we have happy customers.
Right.
Who see that this technology, from performance perspective, but also from the value perspective, gives them the extra advantage or extra boost what they need.
When I look at the energy consumption in my Tesla, so you get that graph which shows you know, that you're accelerating, you're slowing, going slow. And if you could chop the top of that peak off by the fact that it was an ultracapacitor that had taken the power from braking and used it to accelerate, you can then see, oh, that I would go further on one charge, as it were, because of that, because that takes a huge chunk out of the battery's capacity as it is now.
Yeah, exactly, and we can always make a good comparison if we talk about all the capacitors, but if you look at batteries like lithium-ion, when they are like famous marathon runner, Sir Mo Farah,
right.
But they run for 2 hours, they have really good stamina, yeah. Really good technology. Now, all the capacitors, we are like Usain Bolt.
Right.
We have the peak power for in 10 seconds, nobody in the world can beat us.
Yes.
But when you ask Usain Bolt to start running a marathon, he will be not so happy about
yes.
it. And neither are all the capacitors.
Right.
So they are essentially complementary technologies.
So what this is, these strips will then be cut and then rolled up, and that's what's inside them.
Yes.
So the
magic is actually on top of this foil.
Right.
So that's the curved graphene, and the key there is in electrode packaging. The key is that you have to have the best density, but you can't press it together too hard because otherwise you lose the surface area.
Yeah.
So it's always a balancing act that you have to apply force. But you also have to be gentle about it.
Right, right. So at this stage then, the material that we saw being cut there is now being rolled. I'm getting it now. It's lovely to watch this machine. It's beautiful. So that's combining the two layers together, rolling them up into the shape of them.
This mistakes the curved graphene electrode, and plus and minus is separated with our proprietary separator,
right.
and basically this forms the electrochemical package, which later on is then packaged into a cell and goes through the vacuum environment.
Right.
We take the electrochemical package, then we press it together, we make the necessary fixture, and actually very precise laser welding process is going on there because
so that's what's happening inside there, right?
Yeah. And what is critical here is that laser welding has to be as strong as possible,
right.
But at the same time you need to make sure that you don't weld through the electrochemical package. So from quality perspective, here we invested in let's say best in class equipment,
right.
And I think that the investment has paid off. And after this, we go into a vacuum environment, so deep vacuum, high temperatures, because the natural enemy of all the capacitors is water, and you have to get all the humidity out from
all the materials. Yeah.
From,
so
from all the
just in this room, they've got humidity in them.
Yes. Yeah. So basically here we have a deep vacuum environment, and why do you see these boxes? Is it's the pumping in order to get that deep vacuum.
Right.
So
and that's inside this cabinet.
Yes. And basically then the cabinet is moved to the filling station where we add the electrolyte.
Right.
And after we have added the electrolyte, it goes to final welding. So we, as you see, we have actually three different welding steps, but this is to be on the safe side. But everything is as reliable as it can get.
Right. But then these standard size modules, that's really the only size.
We actually make five different sizes. So
usually there are different
sizes. This is the best seller.
Right.
For some customers, like for space products, we make even very specific products.
Right.
Same goes to motorsports industry. But this goes into, for example, buses, trucks, but also green and renewables.
Right.
Windmills, industrial equipment, port cranes. And the base point, it's a universal component. And now the difference comes in on the module level.
So then when you pack
on a packed level. 10 kilometers from here, we have one of the largest container terminals in the Baltic Sea. And in the container terminal, we have achieved 30% fuel savings.
Wow.
Because while lowering the containers, the gravity is doing the work for you. And you can take the energy and reuse it for lifting. So that's one way all the capacitors help.
Right. So what are we seeing here? So this is some of those modules
on
buses in a pack. And this is what goes in a bus.
Yes.
Right. This is a bus ultra capacitor.
Yeah.
oh my God! Because I had no idea what was going to happen. So that is an enormous amount of electricity going through as well as causing an electromagnetic repulsion, effectively. Wow. That is amazing. Can you give me an idea of how much power was coming out of there at that point? Then?
You can take up to 100 kilowatts from this pack with a weight of...
100 kilowatts?
Yeah, with a weight of about 10 kilograms.
Right. Wow. And so, so to give that, put that in perspective for like a batteries you'd have in an electric car, to get 100 kilowatts from lithium-ion batteries, you'd need something a lot bigger than that box.
You would need something which is at the minimum, even with the highest power batteries, 10 times larger than this.
Right. Yeah. Tabby, this is a big black box with skeleton technologies written on it. What's inside?
Inside we have all the capacitors that we start with, that type of welded packs.
So it's the same as those, the ones we saw being constructed?
Yeah, that's the same building block.
Right.
And now here what we have done, we have built a full IT system and a full system solution. And out of this cabinet, we can take out the peak power of 1.5 megawatts.
If you would 1.5 megawatts from that size, because I'm still trapped in lithium-ion battery land, where 1.5 megawatts would be huge.
Yeah, with 1.5 megawatts with lithium-ion batteries, we would be talking about the full container.
Yeah.
So we always say that we are not in the kilowatt-hour business.
No.
That's for batteries, but we are in the megawatt-second business. Right. So you're going to have the smallest footprint and the lowest cost per megawatt second.
Right.
And I think the innovation what we have brought to the market here is not only the component performance, but the fact it's the first in-kind full plug-and-play solution.
Right.
And if you look at this specific product here, when this actually goes to Isle of Eigg, they're
off Scotland.
Wow. Scotland, and Isle of Eigg, as we know, was one of the first islands to go fully renewable energy. What's the issue there is that they did not think so much about the peak power requirements, because the power loads are not static, and now all the capacitors will be used to smooth out these peaks, because at the moment the islanders are experiencing at least brownout situations.
Right.
So to have better power quality, all the capacitors are best to do the job. And I think that Isle of Eigg actually gives us a good indication what's to come in UK, but wider in Europe, because we are now on renewable energy.
Yeah.
And basically as the testing ground, we see that, it's not only about long-term energy storage, but it's really this type of transient power when you move from one power source to the other one, and where all the capacitors basically fill the gap.
Yeah.
And what we see is that similar type of solutions, whether it's island grids or even in mainland UK, will be quite widespread in the next 5 years.
Right. So then this is another application then, I'm guessing, for a vehicle. Is that what this goes into?
This goes into a vehicle, and actually this is the building block for the kinetic energy recuperation system. But in city delivery trucks, we have achieved 30% reduction in the fuel bill by recuperating the energy to the alter capacitor pack and reusing that while accelerating.
Right.
And now this module, as you can see, it's really rugged. You can run a tank over it.
Right.
You don't have to do it, but you can run
it. So it's that solid. It does look...
Yes.
It's not wobbly. It's very solid. Wow.
Tell you one thing, sure, I'll pause that for a second, but I'd love to have one of those cabinets, those skeleton ultra capacitors, or even one of the battery packs or the capacitor packs that they put in cars, because what I could show people with that would blow their doors off. Let's keep rolling here.
A at the fall of the Soviet Empire in 1991, Estonia gained its independence. Less than half of the residents of this amazing country had something you could call a telephone line. They could only talk to each other, they couldn't talk outside the country. The only person who had a link by telephone to the outside world was the Estonian foreign minister, who kept a Finnish mobile phone hidden in his garden. There was one phone. And what happened next was Finland said, look, we're going to update our phone network to a digital phone network. Do you want our old analog phone system? You know, they were going to donate it to the people of Estonia. The people of Estonia said, no thanks, we don't want some rubbish old tech, we'll go the whole hog. So they just literally jumped. They now have the fastest broadband connection, the cheapest, the most ubiquitous broadband in the whole of Europe. They have an amazing tech startup scene. There are more startups per head of the population in Estonia than anywhere else in Europe. It really is a remarkable country that has done amazing things. I had vaguely heard that Skype wasn't invented in California or Seattle or somewhere. It was invented in Estonia. This is where Skype was first founded, where they first started. They were sort of way ahead of everybody else in their technological capabilities. And that's a lot of it must be down to the Estonian education system, a very heavily science-based. And even though we're in this old part of the city of Tallinn, which is very beautiful, lots of tourists come here in the summer, you know, it is the rest of the country is very, very up to date in terms of how they pay tax. They have a flat tax rate, and you can fill in your tax form online on your tablet or your phone in about 2 minutes. I've been told this by so many people here. You have a digital identity. You don't have a passport. You have a special series of numbers, a digital code that you're given when you're born, and that is your official state identity. So they've just kind of jumped. They've jumped ahead to such a remarkable degree. They're way ahead of the rest of us. It's amazing. It's embarrassing, really, for everyone else. I've still got a paper passport. So 20th century. Then, in the year 2000, the Estonian government declared that internet access was a basic human right, just the same as food and shelter and protection under the law. I mean, they're the first country in the world to do that. And they now vote online, you pay your taxes online, you have a digital signature that is legally acceptable. You have your own unique identifying code. It's amazing. And they have done a deal with Finland. At the moment, that's the only country they do with. You can go to Finland if you're an Estonian, and all your medical records are available there. You have a digital identity in Estonia, as long as you're looking where the traffic's coming. But there we go. They're very nice drivers, actually, in Estonia. They don't try and run you over if you're walking down the middle of the street. They're very tolerant. I mean, the thing that when we were coming into land at the airport, I saw a big wind farm on the coast, but that is the only one so far. So they're very, very aware that their infrastructure is still, as you can see all around me, still fairly ancient. Their physical infrastructure, they haven't really modernised that. It's not an ideal country for solar, because they're very far north. You know, it's mid-April now, and it's about 5 degrees. I just heard that one day in June, a couple of years ago, in the middle of summer, it was 4 degrees. So it's not what you call a hot and sunny country. Very hard, long winters. It's a Scandinavian country, effectively. So, you know, it is the most remarkable place. So if you get the chance to come, I would really say do it, because it's an amazing place to visit. Really lovely people. They all speak English, of course, because they're all incredibly well-educated. an amazing place to come. But it has been a real joy to come here and see. We've just seen one startup company. There are thousands, and what they're doing is amazing, and is, you know, potentially world changing. So really exciting day. Anyway, that's just a little Estonia, bit of Estonian history for you. There's loads more. If you're interested, you can find out a lot more, because there's loads more things I haven't told you about. Incredible history they have. Anyway, that's enough. So thank you very much. Please do subscribe to Fully Charged. Have a look at the Patreon link, and of course, as always, if you have been, thank you for watching.
Alrighty, so you just heard some stuff about Estonia and some of their ultra-capacitor technology. Pretty amazing stuff, folks. I'm telling you, I'd love to have one of those cabinets like he had. Talk about 1 megawatt of power capability per second on that deal. Things I could show people with that would blow their doors off. Let's keep rolling here.
Scientists are looking into sustainably powering entire cities, and with liquid-based redox flow batteries, we're one step closer to making that happen. If we're ever going to replace fossil fuels with renewable sources like solar and wind power, then we're going to need a way to store energy for when it's dark and not windy, or just for when the demand for power exceeds the output. If you're familiar with any sort of electronic device, then there is one pretty obvious answer. Batteries. Charge them up when demand is low but output is high, then let the juice loose when that flips. There are different battery types, and all have their own strengths and weaknesses. The best battery for a job like this might be one that uses flowing liquids, called a redox flow battery. A redox flow battery is sort of a hybrid between a battery and a fuel cell. It consists of two tanks of an electrolyte liquid, one positive and one negative. In between the tanks is a cell stack where the positive and negative solutions are pumped, but kept separated by a membrane. Inside the cell stack, the ions in the negatively charged solution give up an electron, a process called oxidation. Those electrons are picked up by an electrode in the cell stack, and they travel through whatever needs to be powered before arriving at another electrode on the other side of the membrane. There, the ions in the positive solution pick up the electrons, a process called reduction. This frees up positively charged hydrogen ions, which travel back across the membrane and maintain the charge balance. When charging up, the entire process happens in reverse. But hold up, why go through all this when we already have lithium-ion batteries? You know, the ones in cell phones, laptops, electric cars, and oh yeah, household battery packs designed for exactly this purpose. The problem is that while big old lithium-ion batteries might be suitable for your house, they don't scale up well for something as big as an entire city. Lithium isn't an abundant material either, so it's not sustainable to use it in these huge applications. And anyone who's had the same phone for more than a couple years can tell you that lithium-ion batteries degrade and lose their ability to hold a charge over time. On the other hand, flow batteries can have qualities that make them perfect for large-scale power storage, like scalability. Need to store more energy? Just get bigger tanks that hold more solution. That's it. Worried about degradation? Some electrolyte solutions used in redox flow batteries can last for about 5,000 charge cycles, 5 times longer than lithium-ion batteries. What about price and sustainability? About that. The most popular metal used in redox flow batteries is vanadium, because it charges and discharges reliably for thousands of cycles. But the cost of vanadium is rising, and if vanadium redox flow batteries go mainstream, that price could skyrocket. Researchers have tried to replace vanadium with organic molecules, but those tend to degrade and need replacement every few months, or the solution they're in has to be very acidic or basic, which can damage pumps or be hazardous in case of a leak. But scientists are undeterred, and recently researchers from USC announced organic water-based redox batteries that can last for about 15 years at one-tenth the cost of a lithium-ion battery. So far, the battery they've made is enough for the basic electricity demands of a single house, but their goal is to one day have electricity on tap for entire megacities. The technology is promising enough that China is building a massive vanadium redox flow battery with a storage capacity of 800 megawatt hours. That's enough for thousands of homes. The battery is scheduled to come online by 2020. China has plenty of vanadium reserves, so they're not too concerned about its cost, but if organic flow cell batteries become comparable, those might not be too far behind. One day, in the near future, they might play a vital role in green energy grids around the world. If you like this, subscribe, and then maybe watch this cool video about how we make batteries out of diamonds. And fun fact, while vanadium may not be the future of redox flow batteries, it is super cool. When vanadium gains electrons, it changes color, going from yellow to blue to green and finally purple. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time on Seeker.
Alrighty then, so then now you heard about flow batteries. Basically, imagine if you had something as simple as a saltwater battery, and when you got the saltwater battery and you keep on reflushing the saltwater with, basically the saltwater is the electrolyte between the plates, and you can constantly keep this thing refreshed. So there's all kinds of promise in all these different technologies as far as energy storage, but it's only getting better. Like I said, one of these days they're going to accidentally uh, put it out there that energy is free, just like I've been saying all along. As far as I'm concerned, they've already done it, because all the pieces of the puzzle are there. If you step back and look at the big picture, you put this one with that one there, and you'll see how they complement each other, and one's weaknesses becomes the other one's strength, vice versa. So let's keep going here.
Denmark has decided to become independent from fossil fuels for the sake of the climate, the economy, and in order to ensure the security of supply. At present, wind and solar energy already delivers a good share of Denmark's energy, and this development will continue. But renewable energy is a major challenge for an energy system that is built upon fossil fuels. Energy production from wind and solar fluctuates. It fluctuates as the wind blows. So what renewables are reliable when there is no sun or wind energy available? Another challenge is the transport sector. How do we create an energy system of renewable energy where also cars, ships and planes can operate on fossil-free energy? A great example of an energy system that will ensure Denmark a 100% renewable energy system is called Smart Energy Systems, a coherent fossil-free energy system that will create lots of new jobs and green energy for the Danes, both in terms of electricity, heat and transport. The northern region in Denmark is one of the places where they are most advanced in the development of smart energy systems. A description of a future intelligent energy system is also a journey around the northern region to places where they are in the process of testing and implementing new technologies. It is at the Department of Planning at Aalborg University that the idea of smart energy systems is developed and described. The researchers continuously review all parts of the Danish energy system, and the results have been thoroughly analyzed and compared with new technology solutions and opportunities.
The unique thing about smart energy system is that in order to identify the cheapest and the best solution, you'll have to include the whole system. If you only look at electricity, then you can only find part of the solution. But if you look at electricity together with heating or together with biomass, then you can find better and cheaper solutions to integrate wind and to implement a renewable energy system.
The key word is integration. In smart energy systems, the energy system for electricity, heating and transport must cooperate. They have to be integrated in order to cope with the fluctuating energy. To become independent of fossil fuels, Denmark needs to streamline its production and consumption of energy at the large combined heat and power plants and in private households. Public transport needs to be expanded, and energy optimization in buildings can reduce Denmark's consumption of space heating by 50%. In 2050, the Danes must use 25% less energy than today. And this despite a growth in society towards significantly more people than there is today.
If we do not think of end-use energy savings, and if we do not think about the sectoral integration, then we end up in a situation where we have two problems. One problem is we will not have enough biomass available for our entire consumption. And the other problem is we will not be able to integrate the fluctuating renewable energy sources, because it is only by having a sectorial integration that we are able to match the demand with the production from wind, PV and wave power in the future. And by doing this, we find the economic consequences of making this transformation are for sure within reach, and the total cost can be at the same level as we have of the energy system today, or maybe even lower.
Wind, solar and wave power will provide 50% of Denmark's energy in the future. The remaining 50% of our energy production will mainly come from non-food based biomass, wood and straw, all provided by Danish agriculture and forestry. In the smart energy system, the use of biomass is carefully assessed so that it does not become unsustainable. It is important that Denmark does not overconsume biomass, since this will start to affect other sectors such as food production. Therefore, the biomass needs to be used efficiently and correctly. A good share of straw and wood is already used directly as fuel in Danish CHP plants today. With new technology, biomass, straw and wood can be utilized to create even more energy. This will be done through the production of green gas, respectively through classic biogas production and thermal gasification. In thermal gasification, the organic material is heated. The high temperature means that gas is evolved. The process has a very high efficiency. Thermal gasification occurs, among other places, at the gasification plant Harbor Heating Plant in the northern region. The plant is one of the most successful gasification plants and has been in operation since 1993. The plant is heated exclusively with untreated wood chips from forests in the local area. Another part of the green gas will come from classic biogas production. The production of biogas will be based on manure and other agricultural byproducts, as well as waste from households and industry. The ambition is that agriculture must provide one-third of Denmark's future energy production. The biogas will typically be produced in facilities such as here, at the biogas plant in Gorstrup near Jørgen in the northern region of Denmark. 88% of the biomass the plant uses comes from aerial farms that transport approximately 300,000 tons of manure to the plant. The rest comes from energy crops. Gas production from the biogas plant at Jørgen corresponds to approximately 5,000 households' annual consumption of natural gas. Other places in Denmark, the manure will be transported in pipes to a common biogas plant. The biogas is produced by anaerobic gasification, a process that requires the biomass to be heated to 38 to 52 degrees. When the gas is extracted, the digested manure is transported back to the farm. The digested manure that comes back to the farm smells significantly less, and the fertilizer from the digested manure is absorbed much better by crops in the fields.
Landbruget spiller en meget vigtig rolle i udbygningen af det smarte energisystem, og vi mærker, at investorer, både nationalt og internationalt, er interesseret i bioenergi. Og når vi kan fremvise gode budgetter og sikkerhed for investorerne, så mener vi bestemt, der er mulighed for at udbygge området.
The green gas can be used in different ways in the energy system. A part of it will be used directly at the CHP plants, where the turbines will be converted from coal to gas. Other parts of it will be used for fuel cells. Gas turbines and fuel cells are very efficient and can quickly be switched on and off. This creates flexible power plants.
I'll pause this for a second. Saturday, December 21st, I did a radio show called Everything is Fuel. And Denmark, if you just listen to what they said, they ain't wasting anything. Everything that they use is recycled, used as fuel or whatever. But that entire system over there is just mind-blowing. So, Estonia, high technology and battery technology and capacitor technology, and Denmark probably are leading the pack as far as I'm concerned, just the information that you've heard here today alone. But I did, like I said, go back and listen to that podcast, Everything is Fuel, and they just showed it all in one system, and they're still explaining, you know, how these things work. That's pretty amazing stuff. So, crazy here, Shaziz ain't as stupid as he looks, I guess. Here we go.
It effectively can adapt production to the fluctuating energy from sun and wind. The CHP plants will hereby continue to be an important part of the Danish energy system. The electricity produced at CHP plants is sent to the national power grid.
In total, the green gas, wind, and solar could produce all the electricity Danes need. The large amount of heat, which is a residue from the CHP electricity production, will be allocated to the 405 local district heating suppliers, who are spread out across the country. The district heating system in Denmark supplies around 1.6 million houses with heating. The district heating system connects the electricity sector to the heating sector. When there is a surplus of wind power, the combined heat and power plants can reduce their electricity and heat production. And large-scale heat pumps can produce heat which can be stored in a thermal storage. The many homes outside the urban district heating systems will be supplied with heat from heat pumps.
I'm telling you, these are some folks that paid attention in science class. I'm really impressed with this system that they... how they're using everything. It's mind-blowing. This is what I've been trying to get the world to comprehend for a long time. We don't have no energy problem. We don't have no energy crisis. And if they're so worried about the so-called global warming / climate change or climate disruption, or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up, then maybe they ought to go over to Denmark and pay attention to what's going on over there, or over to Estonia and look at some of the technologies that they explained as well. I'm just saying.
Pumps that get their energy from the power grid. Heat pumps require burial of a water pipe to about a meter in depth, as it uses the difference between the temperature in the air and in the ground. Solar panels on the roof of private housing or large commercial plants are already a great part of the heat supply system in Denmark and are to be expanded. In addition, heat will also be produced from geothermal plants, where heat is extracted from the high temperatures underground. Electric cars are a way to use renewable energy in the transport sector, but electric cars cannot do it alone. New technologies and solutions must come into play to ensure renewable energy for the entire transport sector. One of these new technologies is the conversion of green gas, a conversion which is completed at a so-called hydrogenation plant. Such a plant is currently being planned for construction in Hobro in the northern region. At the hydrogenation plant, the green gas is boosted with hydrogen and CO2. The CO2 is extracted from the smoke at the CHP plants, and hydrogen is produced by a surplus of electricity, which is generated when wind turbines produce more energy than what is needed. The hydrogen is produced through electrolysis and use electricity to split water into hydrogen and oxygen. A variety of liquid and gaseous fuels can be produced from the hydrogenation. Liquid fuels such as methanol and dimethyl ether, DME. In the smart energy systems, methanol is used to supply the cars which cannot be converted to electric vehicles.
That's right. Methanol is one of the solutions that can bring us to 100% renewable energy within transport. The main problem to put transport on renewable energy is that if we don't think about this in a holistic way, we will not have enough biomass resources to make the transformation. If we use the technologies, the first and second generation technologies that are being focused on today, we will simply not have enough biomass available for covering both the balancing in the electricity sector and the needs in industry, and also all the needs that we have in the transport sector. If we focus on the transport sector, we need of course to have the personal vehicles on the battery electric vehicles. But then we have all the heavy transport in trucks, we have ships, and we have aviation. And here there are a number of solutions that we can use, and one of them is methanol, another could be methane. For both of these, we need to find some ways where we can get power from wind or from PV into the fuels that we run the trucks, ships, and planes on. If we don't do that, then we will not have sufficient biomass resources available for the transport sector.
The green gas can also be used directly in the transport sector. This will require gas tank stations and a conversion of car engines. Direct use of electricity should be priority number one. However, green gas may be used to supplement, most likely in trucks and ships. Green gas can also be applied to the national natural gas grid. Green gas is, in fact, when it is clean, chemically the same as natural gas. The natural gas grid allows for storage of great amounts of gas. It occurs in caverns, which are large cavities in the underground. Here it is possible to store 25% of Denmark's annual gas consumption. As the natural gas in the North Sea runs out, it is possible for green gas to gradually replace natural gas in the Danish gas system. At the same time, green gas can create the much-needed balance between production and consumption in the Danish energy system. When there is a lot of sun and wind, then they produce green gas. And when there is less sun and wind, they use green gas.
That's the whole idea of smart energy systems, to combine green gas and the integration of wind and solar and make this all work. But it's not only the technical thing to do this, it's also how to implement it. And it also the idea that if we invest in doing all this in countries like Denmark and other countries that import fossil fuels, then we'll spend the money on investments and then we'll save imports of fossil fuels. And doing this is one of the best economy boosters we can have and job creations that we can possibly have in economies like the one in Denmark.
With the initiation of smart energy systems, Denmark will have an integrated and sustainable energy system where energy is produced, stored and consumed efficiently. Smart energy systems will ensure that energy is no longer produced at a few central power plants. In the future, a great deal of energy in Denmark will be produced locally. One example is Mariager Fjord municipality in the northern region. The municipality buys energy, primarily fossil fuels, for more than 1 billion kroner per year, money that leaves the municipality. In the future, local companies will become capable of offering the municipality to produce a large part of this energy as renewable energy. This will mean a significant boost in terms of new and lasting jobs, as well as a contribution to a significantly improved economy in the municipality and for Denmark as a whole.
For Mariager Kommune vil en omlægning af energiproduktionen sådan at vi køber i dag for 1 milliard eksterne fossile brændstoffer til internt produceret biomasse med mere betyde, at vi vil få dels en stribe en produktion ud af det, et antal arbejdspladser og et kompetenceløft. Hvis vi laver det regnestykke, at en arbejdsplads skal omsætte 1-2 millioner kroner om året og dividere det op i 1 milliard, jamen så får du de der 500-1000 arbejdspladser over den periode, som det vil tage at få lavet den her omlægning til vedvarende energi, som vi kan være selvforsynende med. Vi har regnestykker, vi har undersøgelser, der viser, at det potentiale er til stede, og så skal vi have systemerne til at passe sammen. Der er også noget, der hedder afgiftssystemer og den slags ting der. Men kan man få det hele til at passe sammen og leve op til regeringens vision 2050, så er det en vej frem, der vil betyde meget for den lokale økonomi.
The self-produced energy and local ownership will mean a remarkable increase in supply security in Denmark. Regardless of what may happen on the international political scene, no one will be able to shut down energy supply to the Danes. Last but not least, an integration of smart energy systems will mean that Denmark becomes emancipated from fossil energy, which benefits the environment, the climate, and the economy.
So I don't know if you caught that, but they said that with that system that nobody would be able to shut down energy to the Danes. So, you know, it's pretty amazing deal right there. I accidentally hit a USB deal, that's what that noise was. Yeah. Anyway, so they pretty much figured out how to take everything from waste to bioproducts, solar, wind, and all that, and use geothermal, everything they've been seeing here for a long, long time. They figured out how to maximize it, 100%. So they're not wasting nothing. And even to the extent where he said that if they didn't do a certain couple things, that they wouldn't have enough biomass to, sustain the energy. That's just one section of the whole deal, where if you get into like biofuels like algae and stuff like that, using algae for fuel, you can grow your own fuel with little effort as far as that goes, and use it for dual processes at the same time. But the whole thing is, all these things I've been talking about forever and a day, you're starting to see it come into play, at least in those areas like Denmark and Estonia, and different places around the world that are taking this renewable energy thing more serious or whatever, but even to the extent of, if you're still going to run what they like to call fossil fuel, which is, I feel about that, you still, re-engineering a few things, can get more efficiency out of even the internal combustion engine. You could still run the same kind of fuel and still be able to extract the heat, energy, and the, what would have been emissions from it. And if you're getting a proper burn every single time, then you ain't got all this crud that's coming out of the tailpipe of your vehicles. If I'm smart enough to figure all this out, I'm sure that the system is smart enough to figure it all out as well. There's smart energy systems videos out there, and I don't remember if I said it, but just for the record, that one particular video is 5 years ago. 5 years ago with that concept. They probably already got this thing more advanced than it was whenever they first started off as a concept. And even smart grid systems. You can turn your house into a smart power supply. Basically, your house would only send the amount of energy necessary to run any given device, no more, no less. And then you'd find out that your appliances would last a whole lot longer. The amount of power that's coming out of that outlet down from your power grid system, the mainstream power source that you got, it's way more power than your appliances actually need to run. And so with that said, all that extra energy is bouncing back and forth between the wall outlet and the wiring and whatever device you're running, and it's generating heat. And that heat eventually, will get hotter and hotter and hotter until finally something reaches its thermal breakdown and fails. Hopefully your breaker switch will kick off before it actually causes any damage, start to wire fire or whatever. there are tons and tons and tons of solutions available, and all we got to do right now is step back, look at the big picture, put these pieces of the puzzle together, and it's all sorted out. In a perfect world, you don't even have no such thing as a landfill anymore. You don't need landfills anymore, because you're going to recycle all those materials. Turn them back into premium recyclables, or actually use them to generate electricity and heat, so that you can, still have the same luxuries you do now. The old system's on its way out, folks. As much as they might be struggling and doing everything they can to try to, stifle any kind of advancements, you're going to see a day whenever they don't have an opportunity to do that anymore. They don't have a choice in the matter. Because, they're the one that slapped the bee's nest and said that there was a need. They said that the world was in danger. And so now, here you go. You got all these different technologies coming to the forefront, and, all it's going to take is for one smart person to realize that if you use that power in a different way, that battery, high-tech battery or high-tech capacitor, will do the same job as that power grid and do it better. So, you know, once that happens, hey, it's all up to the individual. You want to keep paying a power bill? That's a choice. A lot of these technologies, they're getting cheaper. Some of the ones, like the one that over there in Estonia, that big old cabinet that he said run 1 megawatt, that's one that I would love to have in my lab, because I'd have some fun with that. I'd show some people some really cool stuff with that one there. But even at that, Anon 5152 threw a link in there for some cheaper, smaller capacitors in there. And, compared to the Maxwell caps at $10 a piece, $4 for, these things, that's pretty good savings there. I'd love to have a massive bank of those ultra capacitors, whatever you want to call them. It don't matter. The technology's there. It's amazing. And it's getting better by the day. So, some of these videos, they were older videos, but the technology is there. It's been there for the longest time. And so when they tell you, oh, well, we got to get the whole storage thing worked out before any of these alternatives would be viable. Man, they've been viable since the day they started. You know, how you pull that power off of that wind generator or hydroelectrics or even thermoelectrics or even just the power grid itself, how you pull that off and how you use that power is going to determine how efficient it is. And with the modern day silicone technologies, with the MOSFETs and transistors and 555 timers and all that, these little RC controllers, I'm going to show something really cool with these little RC motor controllers that run these brushless DC motors. And when you see what those little things are capable of, I think you're going to be pretty happy. But then when you realize that they don't take near the amount of power to do the job that your average generator maybe running on a gasoline engine or whatever, and you start putting two and two together, you're going to be even more happier, because what these things do and what they're capable of doing is mind-blowing. Like I said, those motors and those generators, they don't care where that pulse comes from. They're only looking for a change in polarity between north and south. That's all that matters. They don't care about anything else but that. And so that's how that magnetic field is pulsated. Field expands and collapses and so on down the line, produces that thing that we call electricity. Nature produces electricity all the time. All of it's usable, all of it's storable. Everything that you can possibly imagine, from radiation from space or radio waves, all that's reusable energy. And those folks who like to say there ain't no such thing as free energy have not paid attention in science class. The world is, you're floating in the sea of it. And just because you haven't figured out a method by which to extract it, it doesn't mean that it isn't there all day long, every day. If you rub your feet on the carpet, or drag a comb through your hair, you can see electricity. It's it's there. It's part of what we live in, an electric universe. We live in a world that is an amazing thermoelectric generator of epic proportions. All the different types of minerals and materials and piezoelectric crystals, even the differences of, gas or, molecules in the atmosphere slamming into each other, exchanging electrons and all this kind of stuff. It don't matter how you look at it. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough. That's the whole key. But to get it down to run an inefficient system such as the one that we've got here in today's day and age, it's going to get better. You know, eventually it'll be all nature-based, and you'll have the same amount of power, and it'll probably be a whole lot safer than today's version of it. You know, less fires, less hazards, and so on. You know, electricity could be your friend, or it could be your worst enemy, depending on how you look at it. So, you know, keeping an eye on all these different technologies. That's why I wanted to do today's show. I wanted to bring a little bit of example of each one of them to the table. That's not even all of them either. You know, there are other technologies out there when it comes to battery storage and, you know, so on. But those are the most, you know, accessible ones, easier to get a hold of kind of things. Straight off the store shelf stuff. So, if you know what you're looking for and you know what to do with it, and you think about you know, something as simple as you got a little cup, it can hold so much water, or you got this massive tank that can hold a whole lot more. So in there you got volume, you got pressure, you got storage. And so if you from that point on understand how this you know, energy travels, whether it be water, air, or electricity, it all does the same exact thing. It all works just identical to each other. And it's that ridiculously simple. Now, when it comes down to, you know, moving energy from one place to the next, we've got the containers to hold that power. We've got the containers that, just like filling up that giant tank of water, once that tank is full, it has stored energy potential in it. Same thing with capacitors. Same thing with a battery. Now, capacitors can charge up faster than batteries. They don't require current in order to do it. So you can use straight voltage to charge a capacitor. I've been doing it for a long time. You don't need a massive amount of current flow in order to charge a capacitor bank. And then moving that power around, if you want to go back to a conventional battery, you know, it's so ridiculously simple. It's mind-blowing. And you got to know the ins and outs of each one of them. You got to know, you know, like for example, you wouldn't want to fully charge a regular DC capacitor and then connect it to your battery, because then you'd get this big old loud boom as you instantaneously release that power. But if that thing is bone dry and you bring the battery and the capacitor up at the same time, then it's perfectly safe. You just actually added an extra storage spot for that battery. But knowing all these things, all the precautions and all the pluses and minuses of both of them, you take this one here to complement that one there. The two together, battery and capacitor technology, gives you the best of both worlds. And once you get this all figured out, that battery is nothing more, from that point on, is nothing more than a backup source, just to keep the current constant, to keep the power flow constant. So even if you had surges or whatever, it's not going to matter. Your storage bank for capacitors can withstand in the thousands of volts, that you don't even need that much storage, but having access to it means that you can keep a constant flow. Now, I did a video a long time ago called 9 Volt, wherein I showed how all I had to do is put a little bit of power in. You'd see the circuit running. I could rest for a while. Then I'd go over there. If I wanted to, I could use AC current, put a little power in, bring it up to speed, and then unplug it, and then do the same thing, you know, kind of wander around twiddling my thumbs while all along the circuit's still running. And you didn't have to put near the effort in to charge this thing up than, you know, you would have otherwise. And the fact in that video where I also showed that there was not one, but 5 or 6 circuits in there that all required at least 9 volts apiece in order to function to their fullest extent. However, when that system was charged up, all that energy you could watch literally as it flowed downhill from the largest load to the smallest load. And so all I had to do basically from that point on is just trickle charge the main tank so that it would keep the keep enough power in that main tank that anything that was below that would constantly be full. So you had real-time power from that point on. When it comes down to resistive loads and all that, there are other methods by, which to actually take, run like space heaters instead of using, current like tungsten elements and nichrome wire heating elements and such. Those basically are designed to resist current flow. And when they resist the current flow, that's where the heat is, which ought to be another red flag to you when it talks about, all these different appliances and what I keep saying about thermal breakdown of these appliances. If you understand how that energy is traveling, you can put things in its place that you can intentionally get hot. Trying to cram a lot of current down a really thin wire will cause it to get hot. And in some instances, not a good thing because you don't want to start a wire fire. So, just by understanding how energy moves around, it opens the door. It opens the door for so many different possibilities. We want to get to a world that everybody claims that we're supposed to be wanting to get to, which is clean, renewable, environmentally friendly. I'm asking what's taking so long because we've already got everything that is that we need in order to accomplish that goal. Now, once again, I hope that my lab will get done soon enough and I can start showing all these things that I've been talking about real time so that you can actually physically see what's going on and understand everything that I've been saying to you. It's not rocket science. I don't use high-tech terminology because I want everybody to understand what it is that I'm saying. I'm trying to explain it in the simplest fashion so that there's not one person out there that can't put it in their mind and make sense of what's going on. Because when it's all said and done, I want you to not only know that it works, I want you to know how it works and how to replicate it if you so choose to do so. Because it's about time that you stop being basically robbed by the system, under the thumb of the power companies and fuel industries and all that out there. When you can turn your trash into treasure and you can turn your trash into fuel and heat and electricity that you need in order to sustain your family and keep them warm when they need to be and cold when they need to be and so on down the line, then that's when I'll be satisfied with mad science. This is the job that I'm here to do. I want to see a day where you don't have to worry about whether or not somebody has the power over you to turn your light switch off and not give you electricity to stay warm. So, I've done a lot of studying. I've done a lot of research. I made a promise to the power company, and I fully aim to keep it. I told them I was going to spend the rest of my entire life studying every single thing that there was to know about alternative energy. And when I got that accomplished, I was going to share it with all their customers for free for the way that they treated me and my family in our time of need. And if they do that to me, I'm sure they do that to you. I'm sure that, there's times whenever you could use that money for something better. Some medicine for your family or food or whatever. It's one thing for an honest person to give you the electric power that you need, a fair rate and all that kind of stuff, but it's another thing when every single year it keeps getting higher and higher and higher. And Barack Obama actually said, words came out of his mouth, that under my plan, your electric bill will necessarily skyrocket. So they're not talking about helping you out. They're not talking about helping the environment. They're talking about making the system more money. You being punished for what they claim to be the problem out there. Why is it that we the people's always got to be the ones that suffer because some people out there sold their soul to the devil when it comes down to the science of things? Real science is mad science. And this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. Because they didn't want to sit there and teach the kids how to be critical thinkers and to be free thinkers. They wanted to teach kids how to be employees, how to be good workers, good little soldiers. And in that game, they cheated the kids out of real knowledge. Now, if you go over to like Estonia and Denmark, then you're going to find some very intelligent people because they get it. You want to have the best of the best education system. If I would have had the means when I was younger, that's where my kids would have went to school, because they seem to really care about their you know system over there. They really care about things. You know, if the world could just take a little bit of example from stuff like that, you know, the limits of where we could actually go as humans, it'd be mind blowing. You know, we have the capability of doing so much more, so much better. Shouldn't be anybody in this world to have to starve to death. Shouldn't be anyone in this world can't get a fresh glass of water to drink or, you know, shelter over their head. We've got all the resources necessary. We got more resources than we can use in a trillion lifetimes. And there's people out there that would argue with me till they're blue in the face that I don't know what I'm talking about. That we're overpopulated, blah, blah. The system put all that in your brain, just like they put fossil fuel in your brain. Just so that you would believe everything that they said. Oh, we're going to run out of this. We only got 20 years left. And then 20 years later, we only got 20 years left. See, I paid attention to detail. I paid attention in science class. And I can tell you one thing's for sure. There is absolutely no such thing as fossil fuel. And I ain't seen a single person that willing to come to the table and debate that. That's all right. You know, you catch them somewhere in a crowd and they'll argue till they're blue in the face. But when the facts come down and you understand what's inside of that so-called fossil fuel, aka crude oil, we live in a carbon-based world. And so everything out there is fuel. Just like I said. Well, they figured it out over in Denmark. They figured it out over in Estonia. Everything out there is fuel. And they're building smart systems to utilize everything from manure to grass to thermal to hydro to wind power, solar power, all that. And they're putting the best of the best onto the task of actually building a system that utilizes all of this. There are places in this world where they turn their trash into literal treasure. Everything from making new building materials for roads to, recapturing precious metals, reusing waste byproducts, biofuels, making gasification systems, plasma gasification systems, and improving on everything as time goes on. So eventually the world will catch up. I'm waiting for them to catch up to mad science. I think the closest runner-up is Denmark and Estonia. They're catching up. You know, they might have the high-tech terminology. I got the vision. And I think there's a lot of people over there who's got the vision as well, because they're doing pretty doggone good. And I like to see the rest of the world doing like that. All these countries out there that spend so much time and effort going to war with one another, doing the ridiculous stuff that they do, and in the meantime punishing in their own citizens with higher taxes and higher prices, higher food costs, and so on down the line. You know, Tesla believed that if he could give the world free energy, that it could resolve a lot of problems in this world. And I'm at the same mindset. The only way that this world, that we the people are going to get free energy, is the day we start investing in one another. Because in the day we start working together, pulling our resources, just like we do here at the People for People Radio Network and Shaziz Radio Network and all these wonderful people that show up and put links to new inventions or new technologies or new research. This is how it's done. And we get our act together, then there ain't no use for the system anymore. The system out there, they're making their money, and they're happy doing so at any cost. You look out there, and it's a chaotic mix of all different types of amazing things, all different types of amazing technologies. These big companies and corporations and government agencies, entities that you pay your tax dollars to, that are basically using your labor, your blood, sweat, and tears, and your money, and even your life if necessary, to get to a goal, when we could have already been there. We the people could have already been where we want to go. I'm asking everybody to take that journey with me. You know, help pass these doggone links to these podcasts around. Help get people out there a little bit of understanding of the solutions that are available. We got everything. We don't need anything else. All we need is each other. Combined, our resources is unmatchable. Combined, our strength is untouchable. If you put several people into a dream team in every community, and what they do is they study and they research and they build and you back them up. A dream team in every single community means that we get everything done fast. It means that we don't have to worry, wait, and sit here and kind of ponder whether or not we're ever, you know, going to see any of this done. It's crazy, but it's true. So, you know, I need people to share links. On my website, you'll find a link to a t-shirt that I made. Make one for yourself. Wear it around. Get people to come here. Get people over there to People for People Radio Network. And if everybody is on the same mindset as we want to get things done, then we'll get things done. We're not here to argue and fuss and raise a ruckus. We're here to solve the problems that the world said we had. And I don't believe the problems that the world we said we had are nearly as bad as they like us to believe. But even to that extent, if you're worried about so-called climate change and the solutions right there in front of your face, there comes a point when you need to stop complaining. And you need to get to work. We have all these tools. We have all these technologies. We have each other. And the day that we decide to stand up and get it done, it'll get done. In the meantime, we're following their lead. We're following their dream. And we're the ones that are making it so. You're the ones out there building the buildings. You're the ones out there building the machines. You're the ones out there doing the labor. You are the ones out there doing the research. You are the ones that go there to get the money, the few shekels that they offer you, to give a portion of your life to making their business better. It's about time for us to make each other's businesses better. Folks, you've been listening to Mad Science. If you like today's show or any other show, share them. Everything's energy. And today, we talked about energy storage. Peace and love. Take care.
Was that man? Stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one hand.
Ooh.
One hand.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one hand.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this? You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay?
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Can you hear me? Give my creation crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Ruckus.
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.